Hello and welcome to Voyage to the Wild, the podcast documenting my journey as I sail around the planet in search of extraordinary wildlife and the remarkable people working to protect it. My name is Charlie Young and I am a marine scientist and your host for this series. And together, we are going to venture off the beaten track to explore some of the wildest places on Earth. Coming up in this week's episode, I'm back out in the field with Project Biodiversity for one last time to help them tag lemon sharks. Dennis Adriano is the Marine Monitoring Program field technician for Project Biodiversity and in charge of leading their shark tagging work. Gathering everyone together, he began the afternoon with a short briefing.
And I'm going to measure the shark. We need people to be on the net. When we catch the shark, we're going to put them inside of the net. And then Nivaldo, he is the only one that can touch the shark. So he's gonna take the shark with the, I don't know how to say this in English. Shalabari in clear. How do we call this in English?
It's a dip net.
A dip net, no?
Yeah, a dip net.
Well, we call it a dip net. So this part that have the weight goes to the bottom. So I think Nivaldo or Tony is gonna be with the bait. So they're gonna attract the shark to the middle. And then when we have like two or three or four shark, someone is gonna say now. So everyone have to drop the part that has the weight. So we drop them. Okay, now we have to shark.
We actually have two dogs which are...
Yeah, now we drop.
We drop.
We drop. And
yes!
And we close the net, no? And it's gonna be closed like this. And Nivaldo, someone, I think it's gonna be Nivaldo. While me and Valera, we are waiting on the table, Nivaldo is gonna take the shark with the deep net, one of them, and then they're gonna move to the table. Then we start, okay? If there is more shark inside in the net, the rest have to stay with the net. Okay. Yeah?
Yeah.
Fine?
Yeah.
Okay.
All good.
Thank you.
So we just had a little briefing where they got a net out, and just to explain to all of the volunteers here of exactly how we're going to encircle and capture the sharks. We managed to catch a dog. There's a lot of stray dogs here on the beach who were very excited by the net and got involved. And yeah, we're just putting all the kits in the different crates now and then going to head out to the water. As we wandered down to the water's edge, I took in the sights of the surrounding bay. The entire coast was awash with white caps and small breaking waves. The culprit of a strong northeasterly breeze blowing directly on shore, which sent swirls of sand dancing across the car park. Looking back, I contemplated the dirt buggies full of bandiclava dust monkeys with goggles taking selfies, and the fleets of safari trucks full of all-inclusive holidaymakers disembarking at the line of huts where shark guys waited, armed with crocs ready to rent. Seeing baby lemon sharks was clearly one of the top tourist attractions on Sal Island. Thanks to their reproductive strategy of giving birth to live young in shallow coastal nursery grounds, people only need to roll up their trousers to get close to these sharks. And given lemon shark pups are known to remain within the nursery ground for several years before venturing into deeper water, the chance of seeing them year-round is almost certain. It's a pretty unique experience, giving many that otherwise wouldn't have the chance to observe these animals the opportunity to do so. But still, something felt quite consumeristic and industrial about it. Wading into the water, I looked around at the multiple groups of people knee-deep being led by a guide pouring a fishy pink milkshake into the water around them. One tourist gasped and pointed at their feet, snapping a million iPhone photos in the process. Catching up with the team, I joined them as they wrestled to set up the processing table in the shallows and prepared the net for the capture.
Okay.
So I'm following the group that have got the net in the hands. We're just wading out a little bit further into the shallows. Whoa, big waves. And they're just discussing at the moment the strategy. They're shaking the bottles of bait, which now looks like kind of a red bloody milkshake. Probably irresistible to the sharks, but looks pretty disgusting.
Guys, other thing is when you drop the net, you have to put your feet on the weight. So
because they'll do anything to escape.
Yeah, you don't want anything to
escape. Yep. Here's one, right. Oh wow, guys, just here. It's in the net, it's in the middle. God, they blend in so well to the bottom. Pouring loads of the bait in the middle just to try and get them to aggregate around their feet. And they seem to be staying there. They're pretty interested and kind of just swimming around. Wow, they're so beautiful and slinky. So they're still dropping the bait into the middle. I suppose it's to catch as many as we can at once. Oh. Ooh, it's teetering on the edge here. Yes, okay, so everyone has dropped the net. Now putting their feet over the edges to make sure it can't get out. Okay, they've got it, yep, so it is inside the net, and they're now just using the dip net to try and scoop it up. Ooh, it's trying to make a little getaway. Ooh, they're so fast, actually. Oh. Ah, so it's got through the net. All right, so the first try wasn't a success. Their team is trying again, they're just actually checking the net to make sure there are no holes or creases in it. Ooh, the shark is back! Oh gosh, okay, there's two. So lemon sharks are distinguishable by their... Sorry, I'm getting so distracted here by these sharks swimming around my feet. They're just so graceful. But they're distinguishable by their sandy brown skin that makes them so camouflage against the bottom. And the team has just captured three and they're trying to get out from the net. Got one of the team in the middle here trying to scoop them up with this drop net. And I mean, it sounds a lot easier than it is. All right, he's got one in his hands. Now they're just holding it underwater and taking it over towards the table. So one of the team is just walking along with the shark, and I'm just about to go with the team now, join them back at the table so that they can take measurements. Okay, so they've got the shark up now into this little cylindrical table, and they're taking the length. Leonard, do you want to tell me about what they're doing here?
Yeah, we're taking data from the different sharks just to have a better idea of how the population's doing here. So average is always taking the average size, and so that means once we have tagged it and once we catch it again, we can kind of know how much they have grown in and like the time in between, like how much have they eaten and all of this.
Okay.
And then also they're taking in a tiny skin sample, so with that we can do some. Not us, but we're sending it to the university, and then they would do some DNA testing and, you know, have a better idea. Is this a subspecies? Is it, like, genetically different from other lemon sharks somewhere else in the world?
Yep.
None of this. And then right now you're seeing him put in the pit tag.
Yep.
So this is basically... a tag same as you use with cats and dogs. So you put them under the skin and then you have a scanner and you have to like mechanically like go over it to scan it, and then you have a number and then you know, all right, is this the same one? Is yes, no? And this is like it's like an easier way of tagging different species because like you would think of GPS or satellite tags or these kind of things, and they're big, like
very cumbersome.
And,
yes, yeah, big.
And, like, also for these sharks, like they're very, very small at this moment right now. Mm-hmm. So putting like a big GPS on them might be very like difficult for them then to later on like go out and hunt and all of this. So.
Absolutely. So this is kind of like a less invasive form of tag. And that goes under the skin,
yes,
so it
exactly.
stays with them for life.
Yeah, exactly.
Amazing.
So, you know, once they've grown up and they've gone somewhere else, if they are ever like caught again by some kind of researcher, they can check and see,
mm-hmm.
all right, this was tagged in 2023,
yep.
November, don't know which day it is. And then the other tag that you see there, it's kind of more of a visual marker.
Yes. So I know those tags. We've used the same tags when we were actually tagging blue-spotted rays in Saudi Arabia. And those ones, the reason why we use them is because it gives you that quick visual identification that, yes,
yeah.
okay, we've caught that before.
Can you make a picture?
Change the water now so
okay.
it still have oxygen.
Yes. And that's important, right? So just for everyone listening, we're not taking the sharks out of the water. You're putting them
in the tube
in
the
this
water.
Tube with the water, and that's so that they can continue
yeah, they
to
can
breathe.
Continue to breathe.
So once the sharks are in there, they're obviously still okay.
Yeah.
They can still
yeah.
breathe whilst
and
you
do
your work.
They swim fast.
Yes.
While we put them in the water, they...
Yep, they're gone. And so the pups that we have in this nursery, mm-hmm. is this part of a residential population, or do these sharks then go on once they become juveniles and adults? Do they go elsewhere in the world?
So we don't have now this answer, but
yep.
this is one part of our question that we want to answer.
Mm-hmm.
That if they are resident or if they migrate.
Okay.
So that's why we are tagging them. And now today we're going to try to catch even the shark that's already tagged.
Uh-huh, yes.
To see like if the recapture from last year or from this year. So to see like if they stay here 1 year, 2 years, then to compare the data.
Okay. And is this the only nursery on the island?
So far we know, yes. We are start studying the shark around the island,
mm-hmm.
but we are putting broth, we are like doing diving, and so far we know it's just this one.
So a pretty important place then.
A pretty important place that we have this problem that like it's very explored with the tourism,
mm-hmm.
but we are trying with them to teach them to do more like sustainable work with the shark.
Yes.
Because this community have to been work with this shark like years ago,
mm-hmm.
so it's very difficult to tell them, oh, now you cannot do that anymore.
Mm-hmm.
So this is not gonna happen, but one of our main goal like to explain them how to do it like in a better way.
Yes.
So the sharks and the people can be happy.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the ultimate goal, isn't
yeah.
it really, for there to be this balance between
yeah.
people and nature.
And nature, yeah.
And I mean, looking at all the tourists coming here, it is great that people are actually coming to see the sharks rather than sharks being seen as a resource.
Yeah.
It's great that there is so much enthusiasm to actually
yeah.
see these animals. But I suppose, do you have worries that it's potentially actually damaging the nursery, all these people coming here?
Of course, we have to have a plan.
Yes.
And to describe some rules.
Yes.
That we make sure that we not disturb the shark.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe the number of tourists that get inside of the water in the same time now it's too much.
Yes.
But if we control the number, we control like the groups, we control the kind of bait, how like if people are coming inside with some artificial
yes.
sun cream and this kind of thing, I think we can find a balance. But
yeah.
how it's now, I can say that it's kind of
yes.
problematic. Yeah.
And so many people in the world see sharks as these dangerous creatures, but as we're proving, you know, we're wandering out here and we're having no problems whatsoever. But with these sharks, they're part of the Requim family, which have some of the most notorious or labeled most dangerous sharks. Mm-hmm. Do people have to be worried about approaching small sharks like this?
No, the only thing is like if people are here, they are in the house, no?
Yes.
So no one's want to be disturbed. The only thing that I always say people like, don't touch the sharks.
Yes. You know?
We never heard about like a shark attack here.
Yep.
Some problems with tourists with shark, but it's because they try to touch them. They mm-hmm. try to catch them.
Yes.
That's why they are defending themselves.
Yes.
So if you are here just like walking around them, they're going to be curious and like swimming around with you, say hi and they're going to go over.
Absolutely. I mean, I feel like that would be common sense, right? To not yeah. grab a shark, but yeah. unfortunately, I suppose there are people out there that would do that.
That's why even with the tour guide, we are explaining them like, mm-hmm. to do like a really deep briefing before they get in the water to explain the tourists that this is a natural place, we have to respect them.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
And this is quite, thinking about what I know about lemon sharks, mm-hmm. this is actually quite, in my eyes, an unusual place mm-hmm. to find them, is it not? Because when I've read about lemon sharks before, I mean, they love their coastal intertidal environments, but quite often mangroves.
The mangrove. Because we don't have mangrove here
no.
in Cape Verde, so it's kind of, yeah. But as I say, this is very new even for the project.
Yes.
So we are learn also with the shark and there. We are learn a lot with them.
Yes.
So this place is really, every people that get here for the first time, they say the same thing. This is a really weird place for the nursery, for
yep.
this kind of shark. But I think in the end, we're going to know all this answer.
Yeah, and it is lovely to think that sites like this are really expanding our knowledge of species that
yeah.
we think we know.
Yeah.
We think we know where to find them,
but
we can always have surprises.
Surprises, yeah.
And one last question before I actually let you get to do some
okay.
proper work. What are the main threats to lemon sharks in this area? Are there specific threats from things like fishing? Have you managed to do any research like that to find out, are they being impacted?
Like in Cape Verde, we don't have a lot of data about bycatching.
Bycatch, right,
bycatch.
Yeah.
So, but I can say that one of the main threats can be the illegal fishing.
Okay.
That we have, because Cape Verde, we have a lot of water and we don't manage to control our ocean. So there is a lot of illegal fishing mm-hmm. happening around the island. And the problem is like, we don't know. I think this is the main threat, that we don't know what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
So, but like here in the island or in this nursery, I can say like, if the develop of the tourism still going like it's going now
mm-hmm.
would be a big threat for them.
Okay.
But hopefully with the tour guide and with the community, we're going to find a way.
Amazing. I love that. The optimism. That's what we need. Okay, I'll let you go back
okay,
to some
you know,
actual work now. Go!
Speaking with Dennis, it was clear that the long-term protection of Shark Bay and the preservation of Sal Island's lemon shark population hangs in a very delicate balance. As he mentioned, they face many threats, from tourism to bycatch. But lemon sharks are not the only sharks in danger. A third of shark and rays, which form part of the same family, are now classified by the IUCN as threatened with extinction. As well as those threats mentioned by Dennis, lemon sharks are also targeted by industrial fleets for their fins, meat and skin, which is considered a delicacy in some countries. Given all this information, you wouldn't be wrong to think that the outlook for lemons and other sharks is pretty bleak. But I have some good news for you. Reversing declines in shark populations is completely achievable. Last year, the acceptance of the High Seas Treaty marked a monumental moment in history for the ocean and its wildlife. For the first time, nations around the world have agreed to protect international waters, which accounts for two-thirds of the world's oceans. With this new treaty, greater protection for the high seas and its wildlife will be afforded, hopefully marking the start of a much brighter future for sharks around the world. On a more local scale, Project Biodiversity's Marine Monitoring Program is increasing the knowledge of the biodiversity, abundance, and distribution of sharks and rays around Sal Island. Information that is integral in designing and implementing effective management strategies that will protect this species and others within their waters.
It's always happened when we catch two or three sharks. They run a little bit.
So they disappear?
They disappear, but they are here. So, but now, like, we're gonna be without light, so we're gonna try a little bit here. If we saw there is some around.
Okay.
We say the team to,
okay,
to
so
get
we'll
inside.
We'll move everything over here. So we're just gonna go and have a quick scout,
yeah,
to see if we can find any more.
Not, but sometimes we come here and we didn't catch nothing, huh?
Wow.
Sometimes it's really difficult.
And so, what, you know, obviously you're still learning about these sharks,
yeah,
but what's your theory? Where did they go?
Wow. I don't want to answer a question that I didn't know, no? But
I'm not trying to trick you here.
I think, like, they born here, no?
Yep.
And then, when they get, like, subadult or subjuvenile,
yep,
they migrated. For, yep, for other places. I think here it's just like a nursery, just the female come inside,
yep,
to give birth, and then they go. Probably they can go. Well, most of the species that we know here in Cape Verde migrated to the coast of Senegal. Maybe they do the same. Like the kagaha, the seabirds, some of them do the same.
Okay.
The turtles do the same. Why not the sharks?
Why not the sharks? They're all just, you know, following one another. And
yeah, because there is like in the Senegal coast, there is an area that happened upwelling, so there is like a lot of nutrient and food.
Okay.
For
it's an upwelling area.
Yeah, so there is a lot of organisms that go there. Like,
yes,
the Kagaha, with the GPS, you can see they go like from Cape Verde straight to there. Some turtles go straight to there.
Okay.
So why not the sharks?
Why not the sharks? It's a party in Senegal. So that's it for all the shark fun today. As the team was saying, they don't always get any sharks. So I feel very happy that I got to see two. And this is something that they're coming out to do regularly, so this wasn't the only chance. They'll be back out again next week, and fingers crossed that they have a better luck then. But for now, gonna head back in, get dry, and get warm. So I am back on board Ferrol, and that's it. That's the end of my time here in Cape Verde, coming to an end, and what an incredible couple of weeks it's been getting out with Project Biodiversity and seeing all of their work, from seabirds to turtles to sharks. It's just been absolutely fantastic. And now what's left to do is to get the boat ready and prepared for our passage across to West Africa. And the first stop on the coast is going to be Gambia, and I absolutely cannot wait. It's going to be so interesting to go from an archipelago to the continent and to step foot for the very first time on African soil. I'm so excited. And we're going to be trading beautiful crystal clear waters for some river adventures. So yeah, there's a lot to do, a lot to get ready. So I suppose I should probably get started and on to the next adventure. That's it for this week. Don't forget to hit the follow button wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you want to see more of the adventure, you can find me on Instagram. Just follow the link in the description below. And until next time, fair winds and smooth sailing.